Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KALW's weekly program of all things culturally considered. I'm David Latulip. This week, conversations with Darren Anderson, one of the choreographers for Smuin's Christmas Ballet. Rashada Dawan, who is featured in The Lion King, will be by. And the New Century Chamber Orchestra's conductor and violinist, Don Harms, is here. Plus, Peter Robinson will be by with his Movies of the Year. Stay tuned. Music of Vivaldi opens today's open air, as my guest is Don Harms, who will be performing as Associate Concertmaster of the New Century Chamber Orchestra. The ensemble will be showcasing their musicians as soloists, including a rather interesting presentation of Vivaldi's Four Seasons, in which each movement is performed by a different member of the violin section. And Don Harms is joining me here in studio. Hi, Don.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
I should say welcome back to both this program, Open Air, which you were on with Alan Farley, and you've been on with Sarah Cahill for then
yes.
and now.
Yes.
So this concert includes music of Handel, Auerbach, Assad, and of course the Vivaldi that we just mentioned. Tell me about this program.
Well, it's very unique. Vivaldi, I suppose, is the main feature. Everyone has heard Vivaldi Seasons. At least they've heard mainly the spring or, it's amazing 300 years later, it's still popular because it's so accessible to everyone. And again, everybody pretty much knows, dum ba dum bum 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 bum. They've heard it a million times. But this concert is so unique because Nadja has chosen, she's going to do the first one and the last. So she opens it with spring, ends it with winter, and has given each one of us, 10 violins, an opportunity to play one movement.
Well, that's what people don't realize, is that the Four Seasons is not just four movements
right.
of music. It's actually 12 movements
right, which
of music.
Within each one, there's three movements. So we each pop up where we are. We just pop up in our chair. We don't go and rustle the stands and go up front. We just pop up where we are. So it's very unique, and you get to hear each person's unique take on the movement. Not just left it up to us to play the way we play and choose what we want to do with it, and it's so fun. And we just pop up. There's no applause in between. We just boom, 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 and we're done.
We should also mention that the orchestra is conductorless
right.
as well, even though Nadja is acting as music director.
Yeah, she's our music director and leads us from the chair. But when we are the soloist, we lead the whole thing, and she actually follows us. Shocking.
Speaking of the Four Seasons, I should mention that you were recently, last season, as a guest soloist with the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony, for
yes.
which I play flute and piccolo, playing wonderful Piazzolla's Four Seasons of Buenos Aires, which
yes.
has that connection to Vivaldi as well.
Yes, usually you intersperse it. You can intersperse it. You do a movement of Piazzolla, a movement of Vivaldi, and you see the difference, and that is a wonderful way to do it. But we have chosen on this concert to just do Vivaldi with the different soloists.
I should mention that Don Harms, my guest, is quite active here in the Bay Area as not only a violinist, violist, chamber musician, and conductor. She's a member of the San Francisco Opera Orchestra, associate concertmaster of this ensemble, the New Century Chamber Orchestra. Why am I saying chamber? You also perform as co-concertmaster with the Oakland East Bay Symphony and co-founder and music director of music at Kirkwood Chamber
yes.
Music Festival.
Yes.
And I have to add that you are a cousin of Tom Waits.
Yes, he's my first cousin.
Talk to me about that relationship.
Well, we have the same forehead, so we look the same. Our mothers look the same, so we do too. Tom and I, he has two sisters who I'm closer to because they're closer to my age. He's 11 years older than I am. But we had music in the family. Our mothers all sang together, kind of like the Lennon sisters, and they played and sang all over, mainly in churches. But luckily, Tom's invited me to play on three of his albums.
Very
Blood
nice.
Money, Alice, and the last one, Bad As Me.
Mm, you also have two solo CDs of your own, The Black Swan.
Yes.
For violin and harp. What's on that album?
That's everything you've ever heard or ever wanted to hear with violin and harp. So it's just absolutely gorgeous. And it's the harpist of the New Zealand Symphony, who has been one of my best friends since we were 17. And we actually recorded it in New Zealand. And it's on, I guess you can get it on Amazon, and you can get it on what is that? CD Baby.
Is there a
CDBaby.com.
And through
and
your
website. My website.
Yeah, DawnHarms.com.
Yes.
Excellent.
And The Hot Canary, also, is another CD.
How long have you been associated with the New Century Chamber?
I've been in it 13 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, Krista Benya-Feeney was the director that hired me, and then Nadja came on board 4 years ago. So, wow, the time has just flown. But it's amazing how it's taken on a new character with Nadja, because she's brought us with her in the dynamics of just really performing when you're on stage. You don't just let the music speak for itself. And a lot of people say, well, you know, the music is so great, it should speak for itself. Of course, there's no gimmicks or anything, but you have to put your own take on it and personality. I think, and the audience loves it. They're usually at their feet because it involves them. We draw them in, and Nadja is very good at doing that.
The program also includes work by Auerbach, which is based on the Stabat Mater.
Yes.
Of tell us about that piece. It's a modern take on a very classic piece of music.
It has many different themes too. It has Corelli's Christmas Concerto. There's a little Bach in there, but it's very modern. There's a lot of ponticello, which means you play on the bridge. A lot of scraping. It's the soloists are a violin and viola. So Nadja is a soloist, and Jenny Douglas is the viola soloist. And it's quite short, but it's really entertaining because you hear all the themes, but in a weird, baroque themes in a weird modern take.
This by the Russian-American composer Lyra Auerbach.
Yes, yes. And she's our composer in residence this year. So she'll be doing we will be doing a world premiere in May. I'm trying to think if it's a violin concerto for Nadja. Usually they write a violin concerto for Nadja.
This seems a very program inspired by other things. I mean, the Handel from Solomon, the entrance of the Queen of Sheba,
this
Auerbach influenced by the Corelli, and this piece by Assad is, I don't have the first name of Assad.
Clarice Assad.
Which is a suite for swings based on the themes of Bach.
So yes.
Everyone's involved.
It is wonderful. I think the audience will just love it. We played last night the opening concert down in Menlo Park, and the audience just chuckled because it opens with da-da-da, ba-da-da-da, Bach staccato and fugue. And it's all the cellos. And Clarice has taken every theme you've ever heard with Bach, including Aaron the G-string, every wedding march, everything from Bach, and she's turned it into just this magical breath of fresh air. And it's wonderful. The whole concert, I feel, is something different. You hear old, friendly favorites, but with a modern take. And it's not like, again, it's not gimmicky. It's very heartfelt and very sincere. And that's what I love about it. I think the audience will feel that, too. Mm-hmm. So I hope everybody comes out, because it's wonderful.
The concerts, one of which has happened already in Atherton, are tonight at First Congregational Church in the East Bay, Saturday at the Herbst Theater here in San Francisco, and in Marin at the Osher Marin JCC on Sunday. Information at ncco.org.
Yes.
Dawn, could we talk a little bit about your work with the San Francisco Opera Orchestra?
Sure. I'm a member.
What a season. I mean, what a fantastic season you just concluded.
Yes. And I love it. I love playing in it. I love the diversity of what I do. And the thing I love about the opera, it also goes from August, middle of August, to first week of December. And it also is like, to me, playing chamber music. I wanted to be in an opera orchestra. Mainly, it's only 26 weeks, which helps. It's small, so you can then get above the pit, above the ground, and play like New Century and do all kinds of chamber music. But opera is like New Century, I think. It's very much like chamber music. You have to listen to those singers. You have to watch the conductor. You have to listen to your stand partner. Constantly be evolving and moving with the music. So it's not just like, you're playing, oh, here we go again. You have to be so involved. And, you know, I'm in the first violin section, and there's 12 of us. So you say, oh, well, you're easy. You know, I play the flute. We have to be on. Well, if you're the only lone guy playing, whoops, you're the last eighth note to play. It's actually, I find, very difficult to play with 12 people and sound like one. So that's the neat thing about opera. You have to do that. And it translates again in New Century, I think, very much.
How has that? How has the change from Donald Runicle style going to Luisotti been?
Well, let's say it goes from a Scottish-German take to an Italian, a wild Italian. I mean, Luisotti is very exciting. He can love you and hate you all in the same moment. So you have to be like, whoa, you're like on a wild ride
that
with
Italian
no brakes.
Blood.
There's
right.
No brakes. It's Italian blood. And we just say, well, he's Italian. I mean, he takes you on a wild ride and you don't know what's going to happen. You think, well, we did 12 performances of Tosca. So you think, oh boy, here we go. Well, every night was different. It was different for the singers also. And it's scary because you don't know what's going to happen. And he, again, he's a great musician. But within that, with that, comes a temper, and it's just like, because if it doesn't go right, he looks at you like, you know, he is going to kill you, and so you're just like hanging on, like that little kitten hanging on the branch, but you got to hang in there, you can't let go. So it's that keeps it exciting. And then again, Nadja's Italian too, so we have this wild ride. My whole life is like hanging on to the branch, but it's fun because they do take you with them, and you either hang on or you fall off.
Right. Well, speaking of the conducting style of Luisotti, you've been conducting quite a bit yourself. Recent conducting engagements include appearances with the Palo Alto Chamber Orchestra, the Livermore Amador Symphony, and Symphony of Parnassus.
Yes.
You'll also be performing as conductor in June with the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony.
Yes.
As our guest conductor. Tell me about your conducting, and what are you bringing to the podium that you're getting from these other conductors you're working under?
Well, again, that's what I love about, you know, people say, oh, not another one. There's a lot of musicians who somehow end up conducting. But with me, it's more of, I love that I bring chamber music, playing in an opera orchestra, soloing, quartet playing, being a leader, all of it within being a conductor. A lot of conductors are pianists, and nothing against conductors that play piano, but they don't have the experience of playing in an orchestra. So I hope that I have the knowledge and the feel of what they're going through. So I don't just like give the downbeat and like snare at them, like, why didn't they play with me? If it goes wrong, I was taught that if it doesn't go well, it's your fault. It's not the orchestra's fault. You didn't do something right that made them not, because you prepared them. Like with bars, we have 9 rehearsals. So hopefully in 9 rehearsals, I will get them to a point that we all feel like it's a big chamber group and it's not just me leading them, that they actually will lead sometimes and I will just listen. You have to listen, and that's what I love. It's like a tennis player. You hit the ball and you don't know where it's going to land. So conducting is like that to me. It brings just, you have this power, and I love to teach and I love to learn. So that's what conducting is to me. I learn and teach at the same time.
What other engagements are coming up for you besides bars?
Well, Livermore is actually coming up again April 6th. And that's a whole program. Then I'm going to, Nashville. Woohoo. Memphis, sorry. I'm thinking Elvis, let's see, country western. Memphis to conduct the All-State Orchestra.
Very
so
nice.
That'll be fun. All the kids from all over, they have the best, and that'll be really fun. So that's in February, and then bars will be in June. So I have February, April, and June.
A very nice post-opera season you're going to be having. That's excellent.
Yeah, it's actually busier than the opera season. Most people say, oh, how do you do the opera season? And I teach at Stanford, too, so I run down and teach my kids. And it's actually, in a way, more relaxing than when I'm not doing the opera season.
Information about Dawn's performances and the rest of the New Century Chamber Orchestra at ncco.org. Once again, performances on Saturday and Sunday at the Herbst and Osher Marin. All the information, ncco.org or at dawnharms.com. Dawn, thanks for taking some time today.
Thank you for having me.
An excerpt from Spring from Vivaldi's Four Seasons. All 12 movements of the Four Seasons will be performed by the New Century Chamber Orchestra, with Dawn Harms among the other violinists, in performances at the Herbst Theater on Saturday and in Marin on Sunday. Each one of the 12 violinists will take their solo turn in Vivaldi's Four Seasons, on a program that also includes music of Handel, Lyra, Auerbach, and Assad. Information at ncco.org. Good afternoon once again. I'm David LaTulipe, and you're listening to Open Air on KALW. Still to come, a talk with Darren Anderson, one of the choreographers for Smuin's Christmas Ballet, currently playing. Peter Robinson will be by with his Movies of the Year, and a talk with Rashada Dawan, who is in The Lion King. The Lion King is back in San Francisco and is running at the Orpheum Theater through January 13th. This legendary show premiered in 1998 and won 6 Tonys, including Best Musical, and its North American tour has been seen by over 13.5 million theatergoers in more than 60 cities across the continent. I'm very pleased to welcome one of those touring cast members today on Open Air. Rashada Dawan is a mezzo-soprano singing in The Lion King. She was born and raised in Chicago and started her first ballet class at 4 years old. While she was in high school, she was not only the first female conductor for the Curie High School Gospel Choir, she had her first leading role in a production of Dreamgirls, a role which she would reprise when she was at college at Florida's A&M, where she majored in psychology and with a theater minor, and served as lead vocalist at several bands. Rashada Dawan, thanks so much for coming into Open Air, you busy, busy person. Oh,
thank you so much, David. I'm so happy to be here.
Now, after graduating from Florida A&M, you were then in Chicago for some of the wonderful theater companies there, including Chicago Shakes and the Black Ensemble Theater. So what led you to The Lion King from all that?
Oh, boy. Well, I was working for the Board of Education, and there was a massive layoff. And I went to the library and decided, okay, let me figure out what am I going to do with my life, because it was a clean slate. And all roads led to the stage. So I figured that was my purpose, and I wanted to operate in that. And so I went, so many friends let me know about the audition and the open call for Lion King. When I got there, I was number 407.
Oh, my God.
And I initially didn't want to go. I ran out of headshots and resumes, and I went to my friend's office, and she printed out some for me. And I said, I don't want to go. The lines are wrapped around a corner. And she said, do you have any other options? And I was like, no. So that was it. I said, okay. And I went. And
well, tell me about that audition process.
Oh,
what did they make you do?
Well, I came in. All of my friends were there, of course, from local theaters. And I left about 2 times, had to leave to go get my 7-year-old daughter and bring her back with me from school. And they said all of the 400s line up. And I just happened to be there, so 407 with my notebook and my music. And I went in there, I was like, look, I have nothing to lose. I gave the pianist my music, and I sang Be a Lion from The Wiz. And the casting director, Mark Brennan, said, I don't want to hear that. Sing something else. And I was like, oh.
He must have been horrified.
I guess he'd heard that. Yeah, I was like, you know what, though? I didn't have anything to lose. So I said, okay, what do you want to hear? So I went through all this Broadway show tune stuff, and he's like, nope, 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 don't want to hear that. And I was like, well, look, I got Aretha Franklin, Chain of Fools. He said, sing that. And I sung it, and like literally for about 10 seconds, and he said, come back tomorrow.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's
so after I left, I think I fell out on the floor because I passed out. I was so excited.
So the tour started when for you then?
It started March, 1 year after I got laid off. So March 21st, 2010, I got laid off. March 21st, 2011 was my first show, or my first day at work for the Lion King in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started the tour in January of this year.
Wow, so it's been constant. It's been ongoing.
Yeah.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
What an experience. What is it like on a tour like that?
Well,
every city's got to be different, of course. We must have some favorites.
You know what I realized? Well, I'm not going to tell on myself and talk about my shop, my love for clothes and shoes and all of that. But every city has its own personality, and I didn't know that before. From the way people dress to the, of course, the way they talk. But like San Francisco has a personality of being very free, very do your own thing, do what you want to do, and I enjoy exploring those from city to city. So that's one part of the experience. Living out of my suitcase is a whole nother different.
I guess, but it must be difficult having a 7-year-old as well. It's,
you know what?
Where is she in school?
I homeschool her.
Okay.
So most of the time, when the rest of my cast members are sleeping, recouping from the night.
She's with you on your tour.
She's with me on the road.
Wow, that's
yeah.
exciting.
Right now, she's at home for winter break with our family.
That'll be such a memorable experience for her, I'm sure.
Oh, gosh, yeah. She's amazing. Genesis, that's her name. She's pretty amazing. Yeah, but I wake up with her and I do homeschool with her for about 2 or 3 hours in the morning, and then we go and explore.
Mm-hmm. What city is after San Francisco then?
Austin, Texas.
Okay, that'll be a little bit different, I think.
I'm sure. The scenery definitely a lot different. They probably won't be as snazzy and creative, but I'm sure they have some wonderful treasures there too, so I'm excited. I want some cowboy boots too.
Very different vibe.
Yeah.
Well, Rashada, after The Lion King, is there? Can you even think of an After The Lion King since it's going so strong?
You know what? This past weekend, I had the pleasure of being in a show with Mary Wilson. She was in a benefit with the Book of Mormon cast and The Lion King benefit show. And I talked to her about the tour, and I said, what is something that you would give me as a piece of advice? She said, embrace every moment. So sometimes I wake up and I always think ahead, what am I going to do after this? And I'm reminded, embrace every moment. So I don't know, and it's okay. You know, I'm willing and open to follow the path and my purpose of being on the stage as I started. So
that and stay healthy has got to be the other piece of advice.
Oh, yes. All this water. I have a new relationship with water ever since I started this job. Mm-hmm. So being able to be warming up and going to the gym and all of that stuff. I really wasn't a big person to do that when I was back at home, but this tour and this job will definitely call that from you.
I mean, it's almost like a military discipline you have to work yourself into. I mean, every show has got to be 112%.
Eight shows a week. I like to say 122%. Yeah.
12 was kind of random.
Okay, look, you're in the right ballpark. I mean, right. It calls for your mind, your body, your spirit. All of that has to be intact in order to really do this job justice, especially a show like The Lion King, because it's such a spiritual show without it being in your face. It's like it touches. I love looking through the elephant when I'm walking down and I see adults just crying at the opening scene. It's moving. It has a message.
Well, describe it for us, for those that have not seen The Lion King. I haven't seen the stage production.
Okay.
So I'm kind of in the dark, and I understand the very elaborate costumes are involved too, that are most everyone is a half animal, half person, but you can still see the person's face.
That's
right?
True. That's true. Julie Tamar, the creative director, and her team, they went through an extensive process of really designing these puppets and the being able to tell the story and look at the puppet, but you also have that person there. And one doesn't overshadow the other. That was probably the hardest part when I first got this job, was to figure out how to have an entire harness on with a head sitting out in front of my body. And then it's connected by a crank on my head with two strings. And I'm in this big futon, like,
oh my
pillowy
gosh.
Costume, bent over holding two puppet legs. So,
wow, what is your character's name?
I play Shinzi. She's one of the three hyenas. So I have two guys with me, one played by Mr. Keith Bennett and the other by Robbie Swift. And, yeah, Banzai and Ed, and they're my backup guys. And we come in and we're hungry for little cubs. But the show, you have Zazu, Mufasa, down to the antelope, the zebras, like the scenery, the puppetry, all of it is just a magnificent way to tell such a very simple story. And I think that's why this show has been running so long, because it's magical the way it was designed. And I think even being on the road at this level in the game, you go in and out of your own experiences in life, because the credits don't roll just because we have this job, you know? Things happen, but when this story can speak to you and your spirit while you're in it, that's what lets you know you want to help somebody else get the same feeling. And I think that's probably why we're so dedicated and in love with it the way we are.
That's great.
Yeah.
The Lion King runs through January 13th here in San Francisco at the Orpheum Theater. Tickets through SHNSF.com, Rashada Dhawan, who is called by HollywoodChicago.com, delivers what is unequivocally a tour de force performance. Enjoy the rest of the run here in San Francisco and for the rest of the tour.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Quite welcome.
Be prepared for sensational news. A shining new era is tiptoeing nearer. I know it sounds sordid, but you'll be rewarded when at last I am given my dues. And injustice deliciously squared.
Be prepared!
Yeah, be prepared! We'll be prepared! For what?
For the death of the king!
Is he sick?
No, fool, we're gonna kill him! And Simba, too.
Grand idea! Who needs a king? No king, no king! La, 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 la.
There will be a king! I will be king! Stick with me, and you'll never go hungry again!
Yay! Oh, I'll be the king! I'll be the king!
Be prepared for soup, be connected! Will the king be on time and gone?
Of course, quid pro quo, you're expected to take certain duties on board. The future is littered with prizes, and though I'm the main addressee, the point that I must emphasize is you won't get a sniff without me! Spanning. Decades of denial is simply why I'll be king, undisputed, respected, saluted, and seen for the wonder I am. Yes, my teeth and ambitions are there.
Be prepared. Yes, our teeth and ambitions are there. Be
prepared from The Lion King, currently at the Orpheum Theater. Tickets via SHNSF.com. And more information, including bios of the wonderful cast, including Rashada Dhawan, who is just here, at LionKing.com. You can learn about where else the group is touring. Roy Anderson's Sleigh Ride. Quite frankly, and I'm not embarrassed to say this, I consider that one of the most perfect pieces of music ever written. Leroy Anderson, Sleigh Ride. That performance with the St. Louis Symphony and Leonard Slatkin. Good afternoon. I'm David Latulippe, your host for Open Air. That was kind of a prelude for what we're going to have next year. Peter Robinson and I will be having a whole afternoon hour of holiday talk for next week's Open Air. But still to come, Peter will be talking about his favorite movie picks of the year to round things out here on Open Air. And I'm pleased to welcome next Darren Anderson of the Smuin Ballet. Speaking of all things Christmas, the Christmas Ballet is currently at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. Darren was dancing with Smuin Ballet for 4 years, and then after retiring from the stage just this past May, he stayed on as Smuin's community relations manager and social media manager, and has choreographed his first ballet piece for the Christmas Ballet. Darren Anderson, welcome to KLW.
Thank you.
So, tell me about the piece that's being part of this major ensemble. It's a bit of a sassy production, this Muin's production.
Yeah, it's sort of a little bit of tidbit for everyone in the audience. There's something that, no matter what your experience level is with ballet, if it's your first time or if you've been going for years, there's something that is accessible as far as the whole classical section that's all in white. It's done to classical music, mostly in pointe shoes for the women. And the second act's all in red, and it's the cool Christmas. And it's mostly pop music, sort of a Broadway-esque feel to it. And that's the section that I choreographed a piece for.
Oh, great fun.
Yeah.
The ballet has been, Smuin's been doing a Christmas ballet for how long now?
We've been doing it since the company started, and this is our 19th season, so this is our 19th production, and every year it changes a little bit. We take stuff out, we add stuff in, we have new creations, so it's sort of a carousel that continually alters itself every year.
Mm-hmm. And has it always been at the Yerba Buena?
It's always been at the Yerba Buena, yes.
Tell me a little bit about your training as when you were doing your dancing. You were with Smuin for 4 years?
That's right.
And before that, where were you working?
Before Smuin Ballet, I was with the Royal Winnipeg Ballet for 6 seasons. And before Royal Winnipeg Ballet, I was with the Cincinnati Ballet for 3 seasons.
You're Edmonton-born in Canada?
That's right, yes. And I trained at the Royal Winnipeg Ballet School also.
Very nice. You were also with Cincinnati Ballet for a while?
That's right.
Nice.
Yeah.
So tell me about your particular piece now in the sassy end of the Smuin Ballet.
Well, my piece is an ensemble piece, so there's 5 couples, and it closes the show. We close every show with White Christmas, but there's usually a big ensemble sort of explosion piece before that to kind of tie everything in. And I'm choreographing to All I Want for Christmas, the Mariah Carey version. And so it's very upbeat, lively. There's lots of energy, jumping, and so it's a really fun piece that gets the audience going towards the end.
Mm-hmm. And what else is on the sassy end?
There's Baby, It's Cold Outside. It's a cute little duet. There's Santa Baby, which is one of the staples and has been in the Christmas Ballet since we started. There's some tap dancing. There's Christmas Island, so we have girls in hula skirts, and we have surfers on surfboard and Speedo and bikini, so it's definitely not your typical Christmas-type show.
I guess not. And again, the first half is going to include some classics, including Aloha, A Rose Air Blooming, A Beautiful Carol, Raisonnette in Laudibus, and an Amy Seiwert original set to some music. Also includes a piece by the late Michael Smuin, and to a recording of Ave Maria. Do you know anything about that piece?
Yeah, that's a piece that Michael choreographed when he first started Smuin Ballet with Dances with Songs, which is sort of a medley of different musical artists. And it was initially done to Willie Nelson, so we weren't quite sure how we were going to work Willie Nelson into the classical side of the Christmas Ballet, and we didn't really see it in the second half in red for Ave Maria. So Celia had a great idea that we could switch it over to a different recording, so they use Anna Muscuri. So it's a very classical, beautiful, I don't know, I think it's a show-stopping moment in the first act, and it's a solo for a female, so it's still all Michael's choreography set to a different piece of music, and she comes out, and it just sort of, I don't know, you sort of get, you feel like you could hear the pin drop sitting in the audience, and sort of that moment when it's finished, and yeah.
Very nice. The Smuin Ballet's A Christmas Ballet runs through December 23rd at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. There's some matinees this coming Saturday and Sunday, as well as next Wednesday and next weekend. You can find out more information at smuinballet.org. Darren, what's happening with Smuin after the Christmas? Is there a period of rest, or are you right into the next project?
We've actually already started for the next project. Our next, the dancers will have a couple weeks off to rest their bodies up and get ready for the rest of the season. We have our big fundraising gala in January at the Four Seasons Hotel in San Francisco, and it's Fly Me to the Moon, so it's all Sinatra. And Michael, of course, has a Fly Me to the Moon ballet, so we're putting excerpts of that together for it right now. So in between performance dates, the dancers have been in the studio working on that. And then we'll bring back our fall program to the East Bay and South Bay. And then we're pushing right ahead with our spring wrap.
Fantastic. All things Smuin can be determined at smuinballet.org, including ticket availability and performance dates for a Christmas ballet. Darren Anderson, thanks so much for taking some time today.
Thank you.
As one of the pieces being choreographed on the sassy end of the Christmas ballet, here is a Santa Baby.
Boom, 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 boom.
Baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. Been an angel all year, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa honey, one little thing I really need, the deed to a platinum mine, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa cutie, and fill my stocking with a duplex and checks. Sign your X on the line, Santa cutie, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Come and trim my Christmas tree with some decorations bought at Tiffany. I really do believe in you. Let's see if you believe in me. Santa baby, forgot to mention one little thing, a ring. I don't mean on the phone, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry tonight.
The great Arthur Kitt recorded in the 50s. That piece, Santa Baby, will be performed on the second half of the Smuin Ballet's Christmas Ballet, currently at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. Information about those performances at smuinballet.org. And speaking of Santa Baby, I happen to have a resident expert on our staff, or our volunteer staff for open air here, Peter Robinson knows things about Santa Baby we could only imagine. Hi, Peter. Welcome back.
Yeah, good to see you, David. I'm not sure about being an expert, but I do remember seeing Eartha Kitt at the London Palladium, and I can only assure you everybody had their eyes popping when she came up with that particular number. So it's the husky voice. But anyhow, more about that song next week on our Christmas special.
Indeed. Tune in next Thursday at 1. Peter and I are going to talk about all kinds of things, like we're going to go into some things about Charles Dickens, about White Christmas. It'll be a nice holiday program for you next Thursday on Open Air. But today we have some best books of the year. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, in fact, I've got my six choices, which will really be for readers of all types of books. And again, it's one of my regrets. Each year, more and more small bookstores seem to close. So I know in Marin, where I live, we're essentially down to Book Passage in Corte Madeira, which is still one of the most thriving independent bookstores. Barnes & Noble, and then as you move up to Petaluma, there is Copperfields. And one of the things I've noticed is as the stores become more chains and the chains disappear, sometimes the people working behind the cash desk are not always the best informed. In fact, I ran into a situation in Berkeley just over a week ago. This was a political science student trying to get hold of Mill on Liberty, one of those classic 19th century studies by John Stuart Mill on Liberty. And he asked, "Do you have Mill on Liberty?" And the person came back, she said, "No, but we have got Mill on the Floss, if that would do."
That reminds me of an anecdote, Peter, regarding, you know, the guy who goes into the classic diner and asks the waitress, excuse me, what's the soup du jour? And the waitress says, "Oh, that's the soup of the day, hon."
Okay, there you go. But I was just thinking, what a great lineup you had today, which again reminds me that Christmas in San Francisco has got choices for everybody.
It's pretty amazing.
Numerous versions of Christmas Carol, the Smeum Ballet, which I always enjoy. They just have a way of twisting a piece of music and then putting it into legs, arms, hips, thighs, the whole body, and bringing it to life. And of course, I listened to the intro about the Lion King, so there really is something essentially for everybody at all levels if you're looking for a festive Christmas here in the city.
Or even to avoid Christmas altogether. There's plenty of things to do as well.
Well, I've always regarded Christmas as capitalism by other means, so let's not get too wrapped up in the whole of this. But my choices this year are six friends are going to be getting six different books, and I've got to say, without sounding too patriotic, three of them, in fact, are relating to British authors. And strangely enough, the second two are both dedicated to Christopher Hitchens. And to me, that was one of the great sad losses for this year.
I concur.
Whether you enjoyed, whether you disagreed, whether you loved or whether you hated Hitch, he always had the right words for the right moment, but sometimes the wrong causes. And I will kick off by mentioning his own last set of writing. It's called Mortality. It was actually written when he was in hospital. And I, on this particular occasion, listened to it as an audio book, which has the extra dedication by his wife Carol. And I thought, for somebody who was dying, not only did his memory seem incredibly sharp, but he stuck to his guns. He was a professional atheist, and right up until the end, whatever hope he offered, he didn't flinch. And there was one section, and I'm just going to reference to it, on praying, because a number of evangelicals and church-going people actually got a Pray for Christopher Hitchens Day. And he responded to them. He thanked them for their prayers, but he hoped that if they prayed, it helped them. And I think that was...
Well, you know, quite frankly, that's a wonderful observation, because that's exactly what it's doing. You know, the people that have that strong a belief in prayer, it's therapy for them as well as who they, you know...
It takes you out of yourself.
Yeah. And I'm just myself discovering his writing, so I'm pleased to hear about this new discovery. It'll be a new discovery for me.
Yeah, well, the one interview I did do with him, I began by saying that if two people agree, one of them is superfluous. And I knew, as the interviewer, I was going to be the superfluous one, because once you open your mouth with Hitch, then it's a rolling monologue that takes you right through the history of literature, philosophy, and above all, what I call repartee. Uh-huh. And that was his great gift in life, to bring a certain joy, even if he was highly opinionated. So my second two books, both, as I mentioned, begin with a dedication to Christopher Hitchens. And the first of these is called Sweet Tooth. It's by the British writer Ian McEwan, who was a close friend of Christopher Hitchens. And it's set in England in the 1970s. And it's a rare combination of both being a spy story, but also a book about both readers and writers. And I think with Ian McEwan, you get that whole tapestry of literature. The story about a woman called Serena is recruited after her time at Cambridge to join MI5. And she then has to get into the world of spying, including giving misleading information to her lover. That's just one level of the story. At another level, at one point, McEwan actually mentions almost every English and American writer going, just in one sentence, from Zadie Smith to Henry James. And in fact, the character for Serena has all the depth of a female Henry James character. Now, I'm not going to give away the ending, but I am going to say that Sweet Tooth makes me smile. England, particularly wartime England that I grew up, the same generation as Ian McEwan, grew up eating Cadbury's chocolate, which is why we don't have those happy, all-white, smiling American teeth. In fact, we count our teeth nowadays, and we're grateful for each of them. So Sweet Tooth has got a connotation. It exposes the CIA for getting involved in actually backing upbeat magazines such as Encounter. They wanted people who were left-leaning to support what was then the Cold War. So this book operates at a multiplicity of levels. It includes writers like Thomas Pynchon and William Gaddis. And so you're going to get a book which I think, if you're looking for a gift to a real reader, will be something they will remember.
Well, we'll put these titles up on our website as well in case people are interested in referring to them.
Oh, thank
later.
You for doing that.
Of course.
And my second is Martin Amis, who is also another close friend of Christopher Hitchens. And this time is subtitled The State of England. And in each case, both McEwan and Amis take a fairly dismal view of where the country was at, and I think essentially where the country may be. They both, in a way, chronicle the decline of the British Empire. We know it takes a long time for the sun to set, but now it's drifting way out to sea. And since today is the day of the high tides and the moon, and I've heard more about it, we had to trail in through floods in Marin, it seems to me that the decline and the sun setting really is a recurring theme. Leon Ablone has a very tough character. He's a Cockney criminal. He wins £140 million and immediately takes up with the topless dancer. So already you're into that funny little realm, quirky England, tabloid journalism. In fact, you almost feel you didn't have to be a hacker. You have essentially a bird's eye view. We cross for book number three back to this side of the Atlantic again. It's called Ike's Bluff. Ike's Bluff. It's by a former Newsweek editor, Evan Thomas, and it is a wonderful, really, analysis of the President Eisenhower years from 1950 to 1960. And I think the title is intriguing because, unknown to me, Ike was a major poker player. In fact, when he was at West Point, he had to stop playing because he was winning too much money from his fellow officers. And what Evan Thomas argues is that when it came to the Cold War, when it came to bluffing the Russians,
those skills came in.
These skills really became important. So if you remember the Dulles Brothers, the era of brinkmanship, the fact when if you lived in Florida, you'd actually started building air raid shelters at the back of your yard. This gives all the background on how good a poker player in terms of international diplomacy President Eisenhower was. Because in fact, with the U-2 flights, he already had knowledge that the Russians were in fact far behind when it came to Khrushchev's promise that he was going to blow American cities to smithereens. Intriguing book written by a journalist, a person who understood the press, and he really demolishes the myth that Ike was a man who ran around in a golf cart and really didn't get too involved. I think it's an intriguing piece of political biography. A thriller, for somebody who enjoys a thriller, is the new John Grisham. It's called The Racketeer, and this is a page-turner. It's a lawyer who has been prosecuted for essentially a form of political corruption for which he only had minimal involvement. And it's sort of set in a murder of a judge. It captures beautifully how the witness prosecution system works or doesn't work, depending on which side of the FBI you are. And it also is a telltale look at how the FBI operates. So that would be my choice. And for people who enjoy short stories, the Alice Munro, Dear Life, a Canadian writer who really has an eye for detail. These stories, if you're traveling over Christmas and you want to get a useful CD to pop into your car, really make a great traveling companion. So those are my choices this year. Rather British, kicking off with the sad loss of Christopher Hitchens, and then on to Ian McEwan, Martin Amis, Ike's Bluff by Evan Thomas, Alice Munro, and for those who enjoy a thriller, John Grisham. Good reading for people who like to stuck up with a book around a fire at Christmas Eve.
Indeed.
And that's not a bad way to spend Christmas.
And the titles, once again, will be posted at our website, klw.org. Look for the Open Air tab. And Peter will be enjoying your company next week for a full program of all things holiday-related, especially on the Christmas front. Thanks for taking your time today for those picks, and next week we'll be hearing about your movies of the year.
Good to be here, David. Good to see you.
Listening to Open Air here on Local Public Radio, KALW. I'm your host, David Latulip. Join me next week for a special Christmas episode with Peter Robinson. Special thanks for assistance this week to Neil Swinkles, who's helping out as producer of Open Air.